is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
G'day, you are listening to RTR FM 92.1. We are broadcasting from the unceded lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people, and we offer our respects to them and their elders past and present. This is the Indie Media Show, a bunch of community and activist news coming at you, very grassroots kind of vibes. You are with Joni and Kelly. Hi,
hello,
Kelly.
Hello, how's it going?
Good. Haven't been on the air for a couple of weeks, so I'm actually a little bit nervous.
Yeah, and I have no idea what I'm doing, so.
You know what you're doing. You're all right. Unfortunately, Ray and Brahma can't be with us today because Brahma's in the vet, and he was panting really heavily last night, and Ray had to take him out. So hopefully Brahma recovers and brings back the good vibes next week. Huge thanks to Jeff and the On The Record team for another fantastic On The Record. Really like that chat with Centre for Stories. I was like, raging in my car on the way over here. We've got a couple of things for you today. I am going to be chatting to Zane from the North Fremantle Social Club, who are putting together a proposal to turn the former North Freo Bowls Club site into a community centre, a community club where there will be all sorts of things from like workshops to music to hangs, activist meetups, lectures, all sorts of things. They want to put together a democratic and transparent community organisation and venue that's hopefully going to be a great alternative to the commercial spaces usually on offer for that sort of thing. What have you got for us today, Kelly?
Today I'm speaking with the Western Australian Council of Social Services CEO, Louise Giolotto. we're going to be having a chat about the rising costs of living in Perth, and she spoke to us a little bit about what impact this is having specifically on low-income households, and also had a little chat about what options are actually available to our state and federal government to reduce some of these increasing costs of living.
The kind of things that can be done to ease the pressure on us all.
Yeah, the kinds of things we'd love for them to do at some point.
We're crying out for. It was a pre-record and there was a bit of a chat about the COVID supplement that was in the Centrelink payment, like right at the start of the pandemic. And there was a good little chat that you had with her about how that got a lot of people out of debt, and because they're out of debt, they were able to get into work. Like I'm one of those stories. I was finally able to buy myself a car and get driving lessons and get on the road because of that supplement. Anyway, I'm sure it's something that everyone, all of our listeners can relate to.
Well, we are speaking with the West Australian Council of Social Services CEO, Louise Giolotto. With the upcoming federal election looming in the not-so-distant future, the cost of living is squaring up to be a key election issue, which is, of course, because right across the country we're seeing pretty hefty price hikes, particularly in fuel, but also in food and definitely in housing, which means that households are forking out more and more for the basics. Around the country, as I'm sure anybody listening would have already know, petrol prices have been pushing $2 per litre, and in regional or remote areas, this is exacerbated. Not long ago, the Woolworths Group CEO, Brad Branducci, actually spoke to the Sydney Morning Herald and said that food prices were also going to be going up by about 2 or 3%, largely due to the increasing transport costs because of this rising price of fuel. And in housing, as we know, we're in a bit of a housing crisis at the moment, and new data from the ABS showed that property prices across our capital cities rose by an average of 23.5%. 5.7% last year, and for Perth, that figure was 15.7%. For renters, a report released in December by Domain Real Estate showed that the average cost of renting in Perth has also increased by 10% in the last year, mm-hmm. which is the third highest rental growth rate out of all the Australian capital cities. So it's getting pretty expensive out there.
It sure is.
Yeah, so obviously there's a lot of pressure on our political leaders to be sharing their plans about how they intend to lower this rising cost of living. So we decided to get the lowdown, as I said, from the WACOS CEO, Louise Giolotto, to talk about the drivers behind these rising costs, the impact this is having specifically on low-income households especially, and what potential solutions are actually available to our state and federal governments to do something about it. So
let's go.
Let's go. So obviously, we've been seeing massive price hikes in the cost of fuel, food and housing over the last year. And it's really starting to stack up the cost of living, not only in Perth, but all over Australia. And I was hoping we could start with you chatting a little bit about what the drivers behind these rising costs actually are.
No problem. Excuse me. Yes. What we've actually seen in right across Australia, and especially in WA, that low-income families are struggling more than ever with the rising petrol prices, and this has been added to the rising housing costs, stagnant wages, and also the increase in the cost of food and essential items at our supermarkets. What's driving this is there's multiple reasons what's actually driving the increase in cost of living. If I just start with housing, you know, a few years before COVID, we had a stagnant housing market. Houses weren't being built. Rental prices were staying quite stagnant. But then once COVID hit and many people returning to Western Australia, there was an increased demand for housing and especially rental properties, which has seen the absolute increase in the price of housing. But we've seen that right across the state. The increase in petrol prices, we all know that's linked to the war in Ukraine, which is really pushing up the prices. I filled up my tank yesterday, and it's not a big car, and it cost me $100. I've never paid $100 to fill up my petrol tank before. And again, with the food prices, that's a combination of many factors, but especially here in WA, it's the cost of transport of getting those food products into the state.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess, as you've said, one of the greatest concerns of these rising costs of living is that whilst everyone might be feeling the costs going up, not everyone is going to be feeling it equally. So as you've said, those in low-income households are obviously going to be impacted by this more severely. What is WACOS actually hearing from the community at present, you know, through its advocacy and outreach, in terms of what the greatest impacts of these rising costs are on low-income households?
Even before these costs, we saw the, you know, Even before we saw the roaring price increases that have happened over the last 12 to 18 months, there was already struggling households due to income support being well below the poverty line and also the Commonwealth rent assistance. So what we're seeing in the sector, especially amongst emergency relief providers and food providers, and an increasing demand, and people coming in and seeking assistance who have never sought assistance before. So this is also families who are working families but on very low incomes. They're simply not being able to meet the basic cost of living. So one of the effects we're seeing is that people, while they may be paying their rent, they're not being able to put food on the table. And they're really struggling. We have lots of stories of families, while they may be feeding their children, are unable to feed themselves three healthy meals a day, going without medication, not going to see medical assistance and support for illnesses they have. That's the fact of what's actually happening out there in the community. And this has a roll-on effect, especially to children in our community.
And in WACOS's cost of living report last year, you sort of touched on that, saying that, you know, welfare payments are often below the poverty line, and that poverty has always been somewhat of a choice that the government actually makes. And there's obviously a lot of talk around what the government could be doing right now to combat some of this stress. So in your opinion, what would you like to see from either both, you know, the state and federal government, or just the state governments, be doing to alleviate this issue?
Primary responsibility sits with the federal government. So we've been calling for a very long time to increase income support. And we know this is possible possible. They did that with the COVID supplement where they doubled income support. We run a project called 100 Families, which we follow 100 families living below the poverty line. And it's gone over 3 years, but we saw that impact on those families. We saw people being able to get their cars registered, being able to pay off debt. And ultimately, what we actually saw with that particular group was much higher increase in employment because they were able mentally and physically clear away their debt. They then entered the workforce. So it's good for everyone in the economy. So the Commonwealth, they can do this. It is possible. It's a matter of choice of doubling income support well above the poverty line and increasing Commonwealth rent assistance, which hasn't actually kept pace whatsoever. In relation to the state government, there's a couple of levers they can also be pulling. We know there's a huge increase in utility bills that are occurring. And we've got to remember, WA just experienced our hottest summer on record. And heat waves is one of the biggest natural disasters that kill people in this state. So what we're asking for is an amendment and a change in their policy in relation to concession reform to base on a percentage. So for those households where there's large families, naturally their electricity bills are much higher. So we would like to see a similar concession system to what they have in Victoria, where they increase the concessions by percentage. So it's percentage based, not a flat rate. One of the things that we've also been calling on is they reduced the car registration by 50% for pension card holders. We would like to see that apply to anybody on a concession. To register your car, to make sure you're legal, to reduce it by 50%. Pensioners already get it. This state can actually do that for every concession card holder on a healthcare card. So there's some of the things that we would like to see the state government do to support those who are on the lowest income. They're the levers they can pull.
Yeah, so there's a lot that the state government could be doing and should be doing, and same with the federal government. And I guess also in terms of bringing down, the cost of fuel, one of the proposed solutions that's been doing the rounds is this idea of cutting or freezing the fuel excise. And just for listeners that don't know what this fuel excise is, it's essentially a small portion of the fuel cost that government controls when it comes to petrol pricing. So the fuel excise is just a special tax on petrol or diesel that's collected by the federal government, and the money is then spent on road infrastructure. So I think where it's sitting at the moment is about 44.2 cents per litre. And there's been some talk around the possibility of governments cutting that fuel excise or freezing it where it is so that it's not sort of going up, because I think it tends to go up as inflation goes up. What are your thoughts on the effectiveness of using this mechanism?
That's a lever they could pull, but we're actually not supportive of it. I know it would benefit every single West Australian, but we know income distribution is not fair across the state. So that I would actually see that as, reducing the income tax to support those who are vulnerable in our communities. Mm. They have other levers they can actually pull. It's more of a flat or a regressive tax. Mm. So if they actually did that, there's going to be less dollars in the tank to then support those who are on low incomes. Mm. So and we're already seeing the federal government talking about tax cuts. Well, they are going to be implementing tax cuts for middle and higher income earners. But all the supports our community need, from, supporting people with disabilities, the seniors, the aged, the people who are homeless, we need a strong tax system. So while they're making those reductions for middle to higher income earners, it reduces the resources to support those who haven't been as fortunate in life. So that's something we wouldn't support.
Absolutely, yeah. It's that whole idea of equity over equality, adjusting the way that you respond to certain things, taking into account for everybody's different circumstances. That was all the questions that I had today. Thank you so much for coming on air and having a chat and just shedding some light on this topic. We really, really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, really good. See you later, okay. Louise.
Bye.
Bye. Alrighty, that was Louise Giolotto, the CEO of the West Australian Council of Social Services, making some really important points about, you know, the rising cost of living, and talking about some of the potential solutions that the state and federal government could be putting in place in order to address the stress that the cost of living is putting on particularly low-income households in Perth and beyond.
And you are listening to RTRFM 92.1, The Sound Alternative. You're here with Joni and Kelly. Hi, Kelly. Oh, my God, I haven't turned your mic on.
Oh,
hi,
no,
Kelly.
I've been silenced.
You've been silenced by the leftist media. Anyway, a group of community organisers and activists down in North Frio have come together to form the North Fremantle Social Club and are putting together a proposal for a member-run community centre on the site of the former North Frio Bowls Club. They want to build a space for art, music, community, family, activism, workshops, all sorts of, you know, like really vital community work. They want to do it transparently and democratically, and as an alternative to the commercial spaces where these sort of things usually happen. And they are reaching out for community support and interest to help, get this proposal together. And I spoke to Zane from the club about what it's all about. I started by asking him about the Bowls Club space that they are looking to lease from the council.
Yeah, so it's a bowls club. It's been a bowls club for a very long time. But in recent years, membership's dropped and the site is being opened up by the Fremantle Council to expressions of interest. And in order to put ourselves forward, we've formed a group, which is the North Fremantle Social Club, Inc. It's interesting. It's interested parties. It's facilitators and, young community organisers and all the right people in the right places, if that's what you mean.
Hell yeah! So you're basically looking to take over the site of the old North Frio Bowls Club.
Yes. Yeah.
What do you want to do there?
So, I think a lot of us met through various like community organising. So, people from Yardstock or from myself, I've done a lot of little private gigs in backyards.
You sure have.
Here and there. And, I've helped you out on a few different occasions.
You have.
We've done some interesting little poetry things. And so I guess the premise of that is a lot of people, there's a few community organisers in terms of union organisers and a couple academics. At the moment, the group has a really quite an open door policy. If you rock up to a meeting, you know, regularly, then you can get on board and help us figure this out. But it's premised on the basis that people meet each other through their interests. We don't necessarily have geographically local communities in the same way we did when we were, 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Yeah.
We meet each other through our passions and through our interests and through how those define us, I guess. And
so a bunch of gigs there and like activist meetings and things like that?
I'd like to run some showcases, maybe bands and poetry, a bit of a mix. I know there's an individual who'd like to do some pottery classes. I know there's people who'd like to run kind of low overhead wellbeing stuff in the daytime.
Yeah, I heard about some improv comedy there.
Improv comedy, yeah. So like we're kind of getting these letters from people in terms of what they'd be interested in using the space for, and our interest is to write the EOI, write the proposal, so that it enables that to be facilitated. So taking a real facilitator role for like a multi-purpose venue, while at the same time acknowledging that the locals want to have a space like a bowls club. They want to have a space that they can walk into, watch their kids play at the playground. There's a lot of public access space around, and have a beer and basically like have a sense of ownership over a space that's family friendly, that's really nice kind of vibe.
And like non-commercial, like, you know, a space that doesn't just exist to sell, you know, beer and chips.
Yeah. Yeah. A members-based venue. I once belonged to the Fly By Night Musicians Club, and it was a romantic time for me for a bit there. And I think there's something important to having a kind of democratically run, collaborative space. I think you do need to have like structure in terms of we need to be able to have transparency around what we're doing and how we're doing it and have people kind of come in and off the organizing of the space. Like, can't be any individual's baby. It needs to get that buy-in from everyone.
Yeah.
But that is, yeah, that's what we've been interested in for, I don't know, I've been hanging around trying to do this with a couple of people since 2019.
Yeah, yeah. I remember hearing some whisperings about it. Now it's like finally coming together. So you're trying to lease out the side of the old bowls club. Like, how does that work? What is that process?
The EOIs have all got to go in the end of April. We will basically lay out how we would facilitate a workshop, how we'd facilitate day use for family, kind of family groups. Maybe someone wants to run a parent group or something. And how we would manage the noise, manage the venue in the night as well, and how we'd manage bookings. And so, like, we lay out how we think we'd do it, and we case the community. We just, like, we've run a couple community forums over time, but we're going to run one more big one in the 23rd of April, actually.
23rd of April, and that's open to the public for people to come in and let you know what they'd like to do with the space, or you know what it should involve, or
yeah, open to interested parties. Like, we're gonna do a bit of a letter drop around the neighbourhood, trying to meet face to face more of the North Fremantle locals. We've been meeting a few over time as well, and so it looks like a lot of community consultation. Looks like. Asking a lot of different community organizers how they'd use the space, whether they'd use the space, and whether they could put that in writing so that we can kind of go, yeah, this is what we'd like to facilitate.
Yeah, solid. You are listening to RTRFM 92.1. This is the Indie Media Show, and I am chatting to Zane from the North Frio Social Club. What's it going to do for North Frio?
I think North Frio has a bit of a symbolic importance, you know, in people's lives and
absolutely.
You know, you see that bridge and you kind of cross it and you, it's like the divide between north and south creates some tension, and maybe North Frio is the space in which we create that mutual catharsis in which the tension dissipates.
As a north of the river kid, North Frio is definitely much more my vibe than South Frio. I get confused and lost in South Frio. Take me to Mojo's. I'm happy.
Yeah.
just hang out there.
Yeah. It's a beautiful place. It's like a interesting, weird peninsula with a bunch of bridges and and people, like the people that live in North Frio have lived in North Frio for like decades.
Absolutely. It's a very established area. Yeah. And do you think they need a space like this?
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people looking into the space and going, well, this is what we want to do, and this is what we want to do. And to some degree, we're trying to work with everybody. That's the goal, I guess, that we can have a space that people have that sense of ownership over.
And so, how are you getting the community involved?
So we'll have this forum on the 23rd, but we're also just smashing the social media thing and North Frio Social Club on the old Facebook.
Yep.
We have an email as well, which is northfriosocialclub@gmail.com. And part of this is like we just post up our minutes. We're like, oh, this is what we talked about. This is what we think we're doing this week. and to some degree, I'm sure we're spamming people a lot. But it's like, well, when we have the space, we're going to want it to be relatively transparent and democratic in that way. We're going to want people to be able to kind of contribute at regular members forums and have a really broad membership. Part of that is like, yeah, a really open, transparent booking process that you can come into a space and be like, well, how does this space work? We'll be like, well, let me tell you. Like, let me tell you my version. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, maybe eventually you'll have your own version. Like, we'll be able to talk about how this space should work. It can be an open discussion. And I think you and I both get that to some degree. When we put on an event, it's, we're promoting an idea, but we made that up, and we drew on the energy of the community in order to enact that idea. And then you sit down, and someone goes, "Oh yeah, sorry, that was really cool. What's this about?" And then you're like, "Well, why don't you tell me?" And you have a conversation. Like,
well, what do you want us to do? Oh, maybe you could put this person on. And, oh yeah, that person's great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a vibe.
It sounds like it's going to be a very cool space.
I think a big part of the bowls club is that it's got the open green. It's got the capacity just for play. Like, part of being in the arts and music community is, like, people have kids, people get married, people get busy with their jobs, with their lives, and it's hard to pop back in and just be like, oh yeah, I like kind of the mutual recognition of being in this space with these people. It gets hard to pop back in, partly because not all of our spaces are super family friendly. And
yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a good alternative to, you know, a scene that is mostly driven around the consumption of alcohol.
It happens, yeah.
We are running out of time today, Zane. If you are a community organisation or you run gigs and this sounds like an interesting space to you, you can chuck these guys a letter of support for this initiative, what kind of thing you do to the space. That'll really help you out, yeah?
Definitely. Yeah. So, if you have an idea for the space and you think that, you think that it would work and we can all figure it out, then send us a letter and we'll include it in the proposal and we'll figure out how to do it with you.
Wonderful.
When it's all done.
And there is a community forum on the 23rd of April, is that correct?
Community forum, 23rd of April, midday, have a barbecue, something like that.
Yeah, beautiful. Fry up some zucchinis.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. What else will we fry? Tell me, please.
Mushrooms.
Oh, my God, mushrooms.
Meat.
Oh, meat. Meat's good.
All right. Thank you for coming on to Indie Media this morning, Zane. And, all the best for the North Rio Social Club.
Thank you. I wonder if...
You are listening to RTRFM 92.1. This is the Indie Media Show with Joni and Kelly, and we just chatted to Zane from the North Frio Social Centre, who North Frio Social Club, my apologies. They are looking to take over the site of the old former bowls club in North Frio and turn it into a big social centre where all sorts of community business can go down. And if you want to check out more about that, you can find North Frio Social Club under that name on Facebook. And you can also join their mailing list by emailing North Frio Social Club, one word, at gmail.com and being like, hello, I am interested. Mm-hmm. And they are also looking for letters of support from the community if you are potentially interested in doing something at a space like this. Please hit them up.